For May the 4th, 2018, we talk about Corpse Party Blood Drive, the 2018 NPD Game Gear game mystery, and we ask you what moment in your life most resembled a video game. Welcome to Level 240. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. David may or may not be joining us a little bit later. He got sidetracked on a bus. So
that sounds so mysterious.
Well, I mean, just public transit. Unreliable sometimes. So we'll see if he pops in. Yeah. So I went to a castle.
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I saw your neato pictures, and I was like, wow, pretty boss.
Yeah.
Your weekend's better than mine.
Actually, where'd you go to a castle at?
Loveland Castle.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is like a personal castle?
So I talk about this on the Exquisite Suffering, so I'm only going to give a small little dose of it. It is a castle that was handmade by a maniac who was brought back from the dead during World War I. He said about building a castle on the banks of the Miami River, stone by stone, with stuff pulled out from it. It's pretty neat. Like, it's not big enough to make a day of, you know. Like, I was I read all the plaques and stuff, and I was in and out in about an hour and 20 minutes, and I was with taking pictures and things. No, go to my Twitter or Instagram and you can see my my little photo essay of my field trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was fun because, like, you know, you're walking around and this is a thing that parents take their kids to. Like, it's kind of strange for a 30-year-old man just to roll up to it alone. You know, and first off, you hear the attendants just telling everybody, like, ghost stories about, like, oh, there are orbs here and blah, 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 which is kind of funny. But then you hear parents, like, pointing at, like, armor or racks of weapons, like, oh, that's where they outfitted the knights. And I'm like, this is southwestern Ohio. Like, it's just very funny that they're talking to their children as though this is a place where medieval knights were.
Yeah, the only knights they have is Knights of Columbus.
And they mostly, like, sponsor park benches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, my area, the Knights of Columbus have breakfasts on Sundays for a special price my parents go to all
Ooh.
The time.
are they pancake breakfasts?
And all kinds of meats.
Yeah,
I hear all about the meats because that's all my dad eats when he goes.
Yeah.
So yeah. No. Plus, it's Texas. I mean,
it's Texas. You're gonna.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my fun weekend. How about you, Jala?
I didn't have a fun weekend because all I was doing was studying. Like, all last week I was going crazy in it, like stir crazy, because I was just studying. Today I certified as a personal trainer. This is my first time being certified in a number of years. I used to be a certified Tae Bo instructor, as most people I think know, because I've mentioned that a few times. And, you know, I'm a group fitness instructor, that kind of a thing. And now I am certified as a personal trainer again. So, yay, that's a thing. And I have another certification for a fitness nutrition specialist that I'm going to be working on next, and trying to cram that down my own throat before the due date, before, like, the course expires. So wish me luck around all the other things I'm doing. But yeah, I've got some plans for personal trainer stuff that is coming up. And also, like, I've had a few people already here in town and online say, hey, I'm interested in having you be my personal trainer because you're kind of a badass or whatever. That's cool. Hopefully some of them are sincere, because I'm legit about to be setting up all my stuff. So
yeah, well, that's awesome that you're building a customer base before you actually start.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I never stopped teaching fitness. I just didn't do it in official capacity. Like, I've been mentoring people, and, you know, like, anybody who's on the Slack who drops into the wellness channel knows I mentor people in there all the time. I give people ideas, I troubleshoot, you know, like, all different kinds of stuff to help, you know, facilitate them with their general wellness. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's an ongoing thing for me. It's been for years. So it's just having the piece of paper telling you that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Making it official.
Yeah.
Well, that is fantastic. It's not fantastic that you have more studying to do, but I guess, you know.
Yeah. Well, this weekend I'll have plenty of time to be outdoors and get some exercise going, because I'm doing a 50K over in Bastrop, which is outside of Austin. Did I talk about it the last time I was on, about like they didn't have the medal at the end of the race when I did the last 50K, and so they gave me a free one. So now I'm doing another one, and I wasn't even planning on doing two ultra marathons in one year, but now I am this weekend. So there you go.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's kind of a bad reward. Oh, we don't have this. We don't have this medal for you. Well, do you feel like running 50K again?
Yeah. Well, I'm not running it, okay. Although I'll probably run some of it, because I always say I'm not going to run it, but then I ran 18 miles of it last time.
Yeah.
I'm going to have my ruck on, so I'm going to have 30 pounds on my back, and I will legit probably run part of it, but I'm not going to run the entire thing. They are still mailing me the medal from the last race. I'm still getting the medal for the last race. It's just I didn't get it at the finish line, and they wanted me to have the full experience of finishing and being, you know, having my hand shaken by the race director and then getting my medal at that time. So
I don't know why, like you said, getting my hand shaken, I pictured by the mayor. I just stand in a top hat with a sash. Yeah.
Okay, this dude, the race director guy, Brazos Bend is where I did the last 50K. Brazos Bend is full of alligators. The dude was in an alligator onesie at the finish line, so not a bear.
As you do. Yeah.
So.
Well, that'll be fun. That wouldn't be fun for me. I'm positive it'll be fun for you.
Oh, well, the thing is that it's probably also going to be pouring rain, too. Like, that's what the weather looks like, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it's sure. Why not? I mean, like, the last time it was hot and humid to start, and then the temperature dropped 30 degrees and it started raining while I was out there doing my thing. So, I mean, like, yeah, par for the course.
Mm.
Par for the course, sure. I'm doing an event. The weather's got to be jacked up.
Of course.
I mean, like, well, I mean, you know, when I did some of my other stuff, I did my super in Austin and it was hailing. When I did my sprint last spring, it was raining. When I did my beast in Dallas, it was 28 degrees, windy, and I had to go under a dunk wall, and it was snowing. And, you know, then it was snowing when I was doing my Brazos Bend Trail Marathon last December. I mean, like, stuff that doesn't happens when I go out there to run. So,
right.
I mean, you know, like, I'm sure the weather is going to be crazy, and I'll get to talk about it when I get back.
Yeah. Next time, frogs. Oh.
Frogs, sure.
Man. Nature's going to run out of tricks. It'll have to start doing plagues.
Ben, how about you?
I'm going to one down Jala, and I'm going to run about a tenth of the distance she's running this weekend in Cincinnati.
Hmm.
So yay, that should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be you and you and Dennis and Dennis's father-in-law.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one other mystery person who we don't necessarily know who it is, because the person who originally was the fourth tore his leg or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got a leg rip.
Yeah.
That is horrifying, actually.
Mm-hmm.
it's not about the distance. It's about getting out there and doing your thing. There is no shame in whatever distance, whatever you do, whatever it is you're doing. It is better than not. Mm-hmm. So good on you. I fully support this. Plus, you're going to have a team. That's cool. See, I'm going to be all alone.
Oh,
but he's gonna be my friend. I'm gonna talk to everybody.
to be fair, we never run together. We just see him at the beginning and the end.
Yeah, but you are a team effort, so that is still.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So,
how far are you running this weekend, Cole?
No, I'm going up to Columbus to watch to see my brother and me perform with my brother. Nice. My brother and I are going to my brother and me. So it'll be my brother and me. Yes. Yeah. So that'll be fun. No running will be involved unless it's like raining and we need to like get, you know, close a block. Yeah.
Well, see, that's only if I'm out there trying to ruck or do some other thing.
You're going to distract the rain cloud, I think. Yeah. So, well, that's good. We've got the usual kind of show for you. Still waiting to see if David's going to hop on, but why don't we get started with... Oh, we got the usual show, The Brief, The Multiplayer, and The Grind, and why don't we get started with...
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, you knew when you posted this link that you were going to go first, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So hit me with what Paratopic is.
Sure. So last month, a short and creepy game was released on itch.io, and it's been given some really good reviews from what I've seen. It's basically about an hour long, and it's a walking sim style horror game with blocky late 90s kind of aesthetic to it. The voices are apparently nigh unintelligible and subtitled as if it were like, you know, on an old school system.
Yay.
The story is basically told through the perspectives of three nameless characters. There's a contract killer that's about to take down a new target, and a photographer that's out there taking pictures in like a forest or something, and then a man that's smuggling VHS tapes across the border. I don't know what border, some border. Then the narrative basically centers on those VHS tapes because they are... fulfilled with some kind of unknown supernatural power, and that is why they are both scary and desirable. So the story is woven around that.
He's got himself a truck full of Ringus.
Yeah. And so this has basically been compared to Virginia and 30 Flights of Loving. Mm-hmm. And basically, Cole, if you have a free hour for hex cranking, you can totally roll with this. Like if you finish a game a little bit early or something, or if you just want to have a little bite-sized thing in between things, this would be a thing that you could play for sure.
Yeah.
And it would be a thing that people would probably dig just chilling out and watching for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm way into it. It's already on my list of potential stuff to do, and I don't do enough like indie stuff off of itch. So yeah, I'm definitely going to feature this probably after Sherlock Holmes. So.
Yeah, I dipped out of, I was watching it and then I fell asleep because Sherlock Holmes talks so much. And then I was like, well, you know, because then I've been studying and it's like, okay, that's just a lot. So like I've been ducking in and out watching you do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I'm still early on in that game, so it's not really picked up yet.
Oh, even worry, because this weekend I'm probably going to be comatose after I finish my 50K.
Probably, yeah.
And then I'll fall asleep watching. I'll pop in for a little bit.
Yeah.
Continue my trend and only have like vague ideas about what that game's about.
Yeah. Nope. So Paratopic, I am interested in this. It's my equivalent of bookmarked, which is the tab is open and I will find that window later. Going from a game,
it's like an internet time capsule.
Going from a mysterious game, let's talk about a mystery about a game.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's been forever since we've talked about NPD numbers, because generally they're not released sometime. Oh man, probably longer ago than you think. They started, you know, keeping the actual numbers of, you know, sales numbers for games and systems and stuff. You know, secret for their subscribers, things like that. So NPD out of the news, except for now, where somebody who works with the NPD, his name is Matt Piscatella, let us know that in the year 2018, there was a Game Gear game that was sold at a major retailer. Okay.
How is that even possible?
So there are a couple of different theories. The basic facts are, you know, for March's numbers, you know, they get back all the figures, and this little anomaly popped up. You know, one single copy of Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for Game Gear. I have this game. It's over there in my closet. I'm not the person who bought it.
Well, and let it be known too that according to your article, it says it's a brand new copy. It's not like a GameStop used version.
Yeah. So this would have to be a boxed product that has a SKU that is sold at a point of sale, and then that sale would need to be reported to the NPD or reported to whatever clearinghouse if the NPD scrapes all of its sales data from. So this is not like a consignment shop. This is not, you know, a pawn shop or like a Goodwill kind of thing, right? Like, I imagine there are Game Gear games that get sold at Goodwills occasionally. It's not out of the question, right? But yeah, this was sold, and nobody really knows how this has happened. Somebody thought, oh, maybe this was stuck between some shelves. The best working theory that Mr. Piscatella puts forward, which makes the most sense, is that because Toys R Us is going out of business, they might be liquidating a lot of stock, and when everything goes, everything must go. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that this somehow is just like a little bit of acid in the spinal fluid just gets shook loose, and then all of a sudden it's the 90s again.
Yeah, like it might have been behind some stock shelf way back in the back. I've been through a few liquidations before in retail, and yeah, they literally sell everything. And when you're moving crap around, suddenly you find things. You know, like I've also been a stock manager, so
yeah.
I know how it is when you find stuff not that old, but you know, like that would have to be like you move a fixture and that thing had been knocked underneath the fixture and has been there for the last 30 years or something.
It's all covered in dust, like those Mother's Day gifts that Clark Griswold finds in the attic.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Maybe it was just on layaway for a really long time.
I finally have the money. Can I have it now? Yeah. Piscatella, he tried, all of this is on his Twitter. I just found a Polygon article that summed all this up. He tried, looking for more information about like what store this was sold from, et cetera. That wasn't reported. That's not there. So the trail has gone cold and we will never know. And now I want to fire up Sonic 2 for the Game Gear on my RetroPie because, I remember that game being not very good.
I want to remember how bad it was.
I remember playing it and pretending to like it because it was a Sonic game and I was that kind of kid, but oh well. Just interesting little stories. I don't expect that to change the world or anything. Ben, what's going on the Xbox?
Just a tiny story. So Microsoft announced that they're going to do Discord integration with Xbox consoles. So people can link their Xbox account with their Discord account, and then they can just talk to people through that chat instead of any Microsoft chat.
Cool.
Yeah, that just sounds like a cool small advancement. That'll be nice.
Yeah. Extra flexibility. Good.
Yeah, and they said that the reason why they did this too is because of like fans' requests to do this, so that sounds like the right thing to do.
Yeah, not keeping people locked into their own like Xbox friends list. Yeah. Doing since it's Discord, you can probably do like cross-platform chat too, like just chat with your buddies who happen to be on different platforms.
Yeah, and I think it works both ways. I'm not sure all the details. They have a link for the Microsoft announcements of it, but then that goes to a page that like doesn't exist. But I think it works both ways, so that if you're just on Discord, you might be able to watch the person stream the game. But I don't know if that's true or not. They say in the article, like, a friend could watch their friend play Sea of Thieves and decide whether or not they wanted to play it themselves. So it kind of leads me to believe that.
So. Nice.
Well, yeah.
This is a good move. Open it up. Give people access to more services.
Yeah, don't make it all, like, exclusive and irritating and, you know, we already know about other things Microsoft has done, which have been exclusive and irritating.
I was thinking that very thing when I opened up Skype today and I had to install something automatically. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
God, Skype.
Yep.
The worst. Multiplayer. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I asked, has anything ever happened to you in real life that in retrospect could have been straight out of a video game? And thanks to Raghavan for the question.
Yeah, thank you, Raghavan. Going to get started here with Alexander, who says, coming home to Galveston Island after Hurricane Ike and seeing literal boats in the middle of the road on the main thoroughfare into town. The wreckage and the eerie silence of a city that has no air conditioners running or transformers buzzing felt like it could have been something out of a post-apocalyptic video game.
For sure. I'm curious if you also were here after Harvey, because everything was underwater for Harvey, so I'm sure it was even worse then.
Yeah, it's that is something, the silence of stuff that you just expect to be there, not just like, you know, AC in your house or whatever, you know, when your power goes out. But like, the only point of reference that I have for this is really hearing for the first time after 9/11 how, like, just how often there are just planes flying over when there are no planes in the sky. It's like, oh wow, this is actually different.
Yeah.
Otherworldly. Ben, what does Devin say?
Devin says, I've been working hard to maintain a regular workout routine, including varied styles of running and lifting most days of the week. I constantly visualize that I'm an RPG character grinding to level up.
I'm sure there are plenty of apps that would that would take your steps and put it into that kind of motif.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure.
Yeah. Nice. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, in college, I was often known in my circle of friends as being a shoulder to cry on, someone who they could go to for advice, would be supportive and drop everything for them to help, and could keep my mouth shut. A couple of times, it was at the expense of trying to help a female friend who I liked, but did it anyway because I wanted to see them happy. Years later, I was shocked at seeing just how many virtual novel and dating sim video games use just such a plot device. It seems so unreal to be in a game.
Well, how do you know that you're not in a video game right now?
Yeah, you're in a video game right now, Greg.
Yeah, we're the GTA style running commentary. Yeah, we're the talk stations.
We're the Laszlos.
Yeah. I was sitting there thinking about that. I was actually at the grocery store, and I was like, yeah, me listening to those stations in GTA was absolutely me just listening to podcasts. Before I had podcasts.
Yeah.
Before it was just like, no, I just want to hear this funny thing happen over and over again. Nice. Chris writes, my Renaissance fair was like walking through, or sorry, it's not their Renaissance fair, they didn't own it. My first Renaissance fair was like walking through some of my favorite fantasy RPGs. I could hear the smiths clanging away and the minstrels playing at the corners. I assume like blacksmiths, not like Morrissey. La-da-da. The smells and sights and sounds were straight out of Elder Scrolls or Witcher. Being dressed as a vagabond wizard, my preferred character archetype, made it all the more real.
And then when you go to those things, the people who are hired by the Renfest will also act in character. So, you know, like every single time I go, like I just apparently look like they need to talk to me because like I've talked to several other people who have been to Renfest many times in a row and have never been bothered by any of the Renfest workers. But I just seem like a prime candidate, apparently, because they always talk to me every time. So,
I mean, you stand out. Like in your preferred manner of dress too, so I wonder if that's the thing.
It could be like because I go and sometimes I dress up, you know, like as per Renfest, and other times I'm not. I'm just in what is normal clothing for me, and I still have people talk to me either way.
Michael or no, Ben? What does Michael say? Michael, what does Ben say?
Michael, come on. We're waiting.
Michael says, during an Armored Core 4A tournament, my entire team turned on me and I had to take them all down for the final match, 3-on-1. Mm-hmm. This was in high school, so it was very dramatic and very over the top. I couldn't help but feel like the last boss of somebody else's story.
Mm.
So I haven't played Armored Core, but this raises questions for me. Why would it be in your benefit to turn on their teammate? Is it like a team tournament or I don't know?
No.
Well, he said something additional in the level Slack channel. Let me see. It would probably come up as a question about my response. How did my team switch sides? Evidently, they planned it with the judges in advance, and you lined up all your builds in advance of the tourney, so they did a quick switcheroo backstage.
Oh, dang. See, now I just want to know more. Like, did you piss them off somehow? Like, were they trying to put you in your place? I can't see that. Like, you're a really nice dude. Maybe in high school people would want to turn on you. And so many questions.
So you had to take them all down. Did you take them all down?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know too. Yeah.
Did you win? I mean, like, if so, then you were more than the last boss of somebody else's story.
I guess what I'm saying is thank you everybody for responding, but you should really be anticipating our questions.
Just include them in comments below, the answers to what we're going to ask.
Yeah, please, because otherwise, I mean, well, I guess if you answered everything, then we would have no content to remark on for this stuff.
What was you like? Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Jala, what does Franz say?
Franz says, a lot of my interactions with other people kind of feel like I'm in a David Cage game, but maybe that's just my social awkwardness.
Hmm. I don't have any remark on that. Man, I'm really conflicted because I would like to play Detroit because it's going to be a disaster and I want to play and see that disaster, but I also don't want to give that studio money now that I know that it's a terrible place for women to work. So it's a real I mean, it's not a hard decision, I just won't play that game. But he said David Cage and it seemed appropriate right now.
Now who's socially awkward?
Sam says, every time I've ever been in a logging forest, I feel like I'm in the first part of the Johnny Cage and Scorpion fight from Mortal Kombat, the movie. If you've never been hiking through an area replanted by a logging company, the trees really are grown on a grid like that.
How often are you in a logging forest, Sam?
I was going to ask that question.
I need to know about this.
Yeah.
Like, this is apparently with some kind of frequency.
Sometimes you just got to go to the local loggery.
Yeah.
I guess.
Is that where they sell beers? In Spanish, it's lagaretilla.
So, well, yeah, that's interesting, though. Yeah, it makes sense that they would put them on a grid because, you know, they've got machines and stuff doing all the planting, yeah?
Yeah.
So
I love that forest and that scene from the Mortal Kombat movie. I think it's genuinely, like, visually cool. I never stopped to think about why the trees would be planted like that. The best I figured was some kind of orchard, but what Sam is saying makes more sense because those don't appear to be fruit trees.
I remember. Like, it's been so long since I've seen that movie, I don't remember that scene, so yeah. I'm going to have to go back and see it.
It's very good. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
I imagine that movie does not hold up.
I have a copy of it on DVD. I just haven't opened it and put it in a player because I don't watch things on my own.
Yeah.
But if it's under 15 minutes, if someone has a cut of that particular part on YouTube, please send it to me. And if it's under 15 minutes, I will watch it.
Yeah. Ben, we did an episode of Adaptation Decay on it here recently. It holds up better than you think. It is
really,
it is dumb as rocks.
It's fun to watch. But it's fun.
It's fun.
The entertainment from it comes from a different way now.
Yeah.
Well, no, it always came to me that same way. But, you know, whatever.
I mean, like, the last time I saw it, I was like 9 years old. So
okay, like, when I watched the Ninja Turtles, the first movie, when it first came out, I was like 8. Okay. And I was sitting there and my mom told me to stop because I was like, where did they get the money for the pizza before they met April? Mm-hmm. Did they just take it from that guy? Like, the guy that they beat up, the turtles are terrible if they're stealing money from that guy to get their pizza.
You're poking holes.
I'm pointing out all these different problems with the movie and, like, the timeline and everything. And my mom's like, it's a movie. And I'm like, yeah, but it needs to make sense. That doesn't make sense. So I've been analytical, and as I am since then, you know, since I was little. So it's just Jala. But yeah, when I watched the Mortal Kombat movie, I had the same kind of, you know, eye and attention to detail and what is this, but at the same time also liking it because it's cheesy as hell.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I enjoyed it and I knew it was dumb at the same time, and you can do that, it's fine.
Yep, it's a-okay. Ben, what does Juan say?
Juan says, this one time at band camp, ..
Whoa.
I kid. My job is basically one big game of Crazy Taxi.
Are you a taxi driver?
Do you go to a lot of KFCs?
At the customer's demand?
Uber. Taxis. Yeah. Come on.
Taxis.
Taxis even around anymore?
I don't know. I think they're all Ubers. Or Lyfts. Pretty much every one of those things I've been in recently has had dinguses for, like, whatever, every single service, and they just accept rides from all of them. I had a similar experience at UC. We had there was a service that would drive people around the campus at nighttime. It was called Nightwalk. I worked for that to get community service hours for either honors or a scholarship or something. It was fun driving people around because you get to meet a lot of drunk people and laugh at them trying to make conversation with you. But it was very much like, you know, there was no GPS. We just had a dispatcher who would tell us like where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Jala. That seems so dated now, and that was only 10 years ago.
I know, right?
Dude, yeah, like, I remember having to print out directions from Google or something
Map
before.
MapQuest.
Yeah.
Yahoo Maps.
MapQuest, yeah, all that stuff way before. And before that, oh my god, having an actual physical map, whoa.
Road Atlas, love those things.
Yes.
They used to sell maps in gas stations.
Yeah. Every single vacation, like when we go to South Carolina or something, I would be the person, you know, in the passenger seat with the map, like acting as navigator. It was a lot of fun. And that's just straight up not a thing anymore. Oh, well. <Yeah. laughs> Let's see here. Jala, what does Jack say?
Jack says, for you East Coast people, I went to Action Park several times in the early 90s, and if that doesn't qualify as a cartoonish roller coaster tycoon experience, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Action Park is that notoriously dangerous water park. Not Schlitterbahn, where that kid tragically got decapitated, but the precursor to that. Action Park, I think there's a documentary about it or something. Like, local hospitals would call it Traction Park or Class Action Park. No, I could definitely see that. You were at the whim of some kind of, just on like the next level of reality up, somebody was playing a sadistic little shit was playing Water Park Tycoon, and that is how Action Park happened. Yeah. Let's see. And then finally here, Lindsay says, I used to skateboard. I was by no means the best at it, but I enjoyed it. I would go to my church's parking lot and try to learn new tricks, and I always ended up getting hurt. One day, I thought I would grab onto the back of a four-wheeler and skitch, and it was going good for a little while until I hit a patch of gravel and ripped all the skin off my back. Now I know what my Tony Hawk characters feel like.
Cripes.
Oh, man.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, that's pretty rough, dude.
Did the four-wheeler know that you were going to sketch on it, or was it somebody who was unaware and they intentionally tried to shake you?
We're waiting.
Anticipate. Come on.
Yeah.
But that sucks. I would not want to have that happen to me.
No.
God. But like, you know, that's a common experience. You fall off your bike and like, oh, yeah, you just have to pick the gravel out of your skin.
I broke my leg, both bones. I snapped my leg clean in half when I fell off my bike once.
Oh, Jesus.
I never skidded on gravel. However, I made up for it all those times everybody else was skidding on gravel.
Mm-hmm. No, you just had to outdo everybody.
Uh-huh. Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. Cool. So my experience that was like this was the time I had a severe allergic reaction to some kind of tranquilizer that I was taking. It was like an anti-nausea medicine called Compazine. I was in like fifth grade and I had terrible nausea. So like, hey, we'll give you this and it'll help this not happen. Turns out it's off the market because this was just common enough. It severs the connection between your brain and like the cranial nerves that go to your face. So like,
those seem important.
Yeah. You know, so like you can still control stuff, except my tongue started pulling back into my throat and I couldn't control it or figure out why. And then it would start sticking out on its own. I lost control of my eyebrows.
Oh my
at
gosh.
One point, like they were like going up until the point where it hurt and it was going down. And then I hadn't played like a Silent Hill or something, but like all of the Jacob's Ladder twitching and stuff and people losing control over it. It's like, oh yeah, this is totally like a Lisa in the hospital kind of thing.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say that your face looked like Uncanny Valley.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean, or like a weird Bethesda animation glitch or something. Apparently it was bad enough. You know, you go to the, you go to the emergency room and they run triage. And anytime I've ever, I think that's the only time I've ever been taken to the emergency room for something on me. But like you go and you expect to wait and they take in the people who are most severe. Like I was freaked out because I lost control of my face, but they, I didn't realize that it was serious until they got there. They said, yeah, I mean, you know, like he's got these facial tremors or whatever. And like immediately my shirt was off and they were putting like the electrodes on my chest because you're like, yeah, this kind of allergic reaction is no good. Like we need to get you, like we need to start prepping you in the waiting room as we get you back.
We're going to take off your face.
Yeah. Oh no, his face has gone crazy. Ben, how about you? Your video game in real life moment.
I was trying to think of one. I think the best I could come up with was TIS 100 for programming, and that being like kind of one to one at certain points.
Oh, your job doing programming. I'm like, oh, this is like a Zachtronics game.
Yeah.
Nice. Jala, how about you?
Well, okay, this is Raghavan who made this question, but I have a lot of answers I could give for this because I have been in near-death circumstances or had adventures on so many different occasions. And then, too, my life is sort of like a visual novel any day that you pick. So I don't know. I can have any number of answers. However, I will pick the time that my coffee table flew at my car and almost killed me.
What?
So that was that, yeah.
So you were in Alan Wake.
I was moving and I had all of this stuff. Okay, so basically when I was in college, I worked full time. And while I was in college, I lived at home and I would pay for my schooling. But then I would also save up money and buy stuff from the places that I work, because I used to work at Pier 1. I used to work at Kohl's and I would get stuff for my eventual apartment. So I had a really nice place. I totally decked out when I finally moved into my own place because I had bought all this stuff and planned it out way in advance, long time ago. Well, there's this one particular thing. I had a coffee table, cocoa bark inlay, really nice, beautiful table. And I kept it inside of my room until the day that I move and keep it. Well, my dad didn't want to make two trips across town when I moved. And so he had everything, all the boxes and everything strapped on in this trailer on, you know, that he had built. And like, it was Beverly Hills style, Beverly Hillbillies style, you know, like the fucking settee was hanging off the side by ropes kind of thing. Okay. And, you know, you could basically see grandma in the back with the rocking chair. And so the last thing was the table. And I told him, put it upside down with the legs sticking up because it'll catch the wind resistance and, you know, go flying off. And my dad's like, no, it'll be fine. And he wedges it in there. See, it's fine. He's an old Cuban man. He won't listen to anybody. Okay, fine. Sure. I was tired. Whatever. I tell him, don't go on the freeway. Stay on the feeder road. I know not everybody has feeder roads, but down here, if there is a freeway, there is also a slower, you know, lane on the side of the freeway that has traffic lights that is, you know, obviously
like whatever. An access road.
An access road. That's another word for it. And so I've told him, stay on the feeder road. Don't go on the actual freeway. Okay. What's he do? He gets on the freeway, and I'm in my car, following behind him with my friend who is helping me move. And we're going, we get probably halfway there, maybe even two thirds of the way there, and no problems. Okay. And you know, I'm just supposed to be watching the Beverly Hillbillies pile to make sure nothing is shifting too much. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, that table catches the wind when we're going along.
Yay.
And yay. You know what happens? It goes shoop, shoop. And then it falls and it hits the pavement, and then splinters cart start flying over all my car, and then the bottom, the metal base of it, bounces off and flies across the traffic, bounces off to one side, and then the tabletop rotates and flips until it's horizontal and flying towards my windshield. We're like, if it goes through my windshield, it's decapitating the both of us. And my friend is screaming her head off. Oh, no. And I, like a ninja, you know, because I have a history of things flying at my car. I'll talk about that in a minute. I, like a ninja, dodge out of the way. and get back into the lane, and I burst out laughing because I think it's fucking hilarious. Right. I'm just like, that's a story for Monday right there. You know, and nobody behind me, like, there wasn't very much traffic at the time, so nobody else had a problem dodging this flying debris. Okay. Right. That was not a problem. And it actually, the pieces ended up both going to the side of the road anyway, so they weren't even in the way. Okay, great, convenient, right? So I call up my dad, and he's like, "Oh, Mija, did we miss? You know, did we lose something?" And I was like laughing, and I'm like, "My coffee table."
You made a scene. You know?
Yeah. And so, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mija. I'll get you another one." And you know, like, we had to pull over and tighten the load and shift stuff around, and I am just laughing, and my friend thinks she's just freaking out, and you know, white as a sheet, you know, all this other stuff. And I never did get another coffee table from my father. I just didn't have a coffee table ever. The end. I never did get one. However, that was a very, very funny story for me. And because I have crazy things happen to me all the time, I was just rolling with it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like, I've also had a bale of hay fly at my car, fall off of a truck and fly at my car and start coming apart all over the road. I have had an 18-wheeler in front of me blow a tire and start fishtailing all over the road. Mm. So, like, I've had things happen.
A lot of set-piece moments.
Yeah, a lot of QTEs. I mean,
there's that, you know, there's also, hey dude, my life really is like, I almost died on a roller coaster. I think I talked about that last time, right? About my near death on the roller coaster, falling out of the cart at Space Mountain.
I didn't
talk about that. Oh, okay, well, that's another thing that happened. I can add that to the pile. Different adventures that I had. Oh, I think I talked about that when we were doing the Subnautica thing, when we weren't doing an episode. We were on that thing. I told a couple of other near-death experiences involving the ocean that time, because we were in Subnautica. So, yeah, I've got plenty of stories I could tell you about weird crap that happens. So... That's one of my jolly narratives. That's one of the ones I like the best, because it is probably the most disconcerting to hear. Your coffee table flew at your car, and what? How did this happen?
Yeah, like I said, you got in a QTE.
Mm-hmm, for sure. My life is one giant QTE.
God, that's funny. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy you're okay.
Yay!
Yay. Oh. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, like that, and the prompts go up on Monday afternoons. I about said Tuesday, but Monday. It's Mondays now. It's always been Mondays.
Monday's the new Tuesday.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, it's been the longest since you've been here, so I will put it to you first.
Oh, snap. Okay. It's been a while since I've been the new, oldest, newest, I don't know, whatever. Okay, so I played Abyss Odyssey through with Briar. Mm. And because I haven't talked about this game really in detail in 3 years, even though I mention it quite a bit, I'm going to talk about it a little bit as if I had never played it, because Briar didn't even know what this game was and confused it with another game with Abyss in the title. So I'm just going to do like a rundown on what this is. So Abyss Odyssey is one of my favorite things to co-op with just one person. This game basically has an Art Nouveau aesthetic and really great music. It's an action-adventure game with procedurally generated levels and a detailed battle system that kind of resembles both Street Fighter and Smash Brothers, to the point that Briar made the comparison to Smash and said that the combat felt good in their hands. So, you know, if you've played something like Smash or even Street Fighter, this would play comfortably for you. It was made by Ace Team, who also made Xenoclash. They're a Chilean indie developer. The monsters and many other of the elements in the game are all based on Chilean myth and folklore. Mm-hmm. And in the game, the narrative is that a warlock's nightmares are infecting reality in 19th century Chile. And all of the protagonists are figments of the warlock's dreams. The main character, a redheaded lady named Katrien, is the warlock's memory of his long dead lover. And the monk which is the character I like playing, is a manifestation of all the souls who died fighting to get to the warlock and end the nightmares. Hmm. And then there's also an unlockable character named Princess Pingoya, who is based on Chilean water spirits. So she's basically a naked lady with a spear.
Okay.
So I was just like, how do I unlock the naked lady? I need to be the naked lady. I don't know. Like, that's me. Anyway, so yeah, it's a one or two player game, although I definitely recommend co-op. You unlock different power-ups, power-up moves. You can buy weapons and items to help boost your stats or save your game. You have to have a camp token in order to save your game during any particular playthrough. And otherwise, the only thing that you retain is your levels from your playthrough and then your money from playthrough to playthrough. Hmm. And you can play also as any of the monsters in the game using tokens that you earn from beating special monster rooms or purchasing the tokens from the merchant. And the camp tokens that you use to save your game, you can only use them at certain spots where there's, you know, like a campsite, and there's different levels to them. And the level of the camp token indicates how many, like, human soldiers you have that will just pop up at the campsite and follow you around that level and help you fight enemies. And when you die, like when Catrien or the monk dies, a soldier will take your place and you can continue as a basically like a really depowered, disempowered, like human person. So you're really limited. Your moveset is different and you can play as a human. But if you can get that human to a res shrine, you can bring Catrien or the monk back and keep going.
Oh, good.
At full health. And so between Briar's proficiency and Smash translating over to this game and my playing my monk, who is like level 37 or so, mm-hmm. Briar and I got to the warlock and beat him. So we're totally going to do another playthrough later on this week. And nice. It was much fun. So I definitely recommend this game. I've mentioned it several times, but just for all those people who haven't heard me talk about it in detail since like 2015 or whenever it was I last really discussed it. There you go. So, yeah. Any questions about Abyss Odyssey before I move on?
No. Go ahead. But
did you unlock the naked lady?
No, I found out how to unlock her. I have not known this entire time, but basically there is a treasure room and you have to go to the treasure room and basically throw all your money into a Pingoya fountain. And that is, you have to throw in, I want to say it's 250,000 or 300,000 coins into this fountain in order mm-hmm. to, you know, have her as an unlockable character. And that's hard to do because, you know, on any given playthrough, you might make like 10,000 if you're conservative. So, I mean, like you have to make that like a goal to go through and like throw your money in the fountain every single time and not buy items and right. stuff.
Deprive yourself.
So. Yeah.
Okay, sure. But it saves for like game to game though. It's like yes, you can do yes, it across multiple. Saves. Gotcha. Cool. Yes.
Yeah. There's no way you can make that much in one playthrough of the game, so
yeah.
that wouldn't work out. Well, I guess there could be, but no.
is it random enough where playthroughs done back to back like that would be rewarding?
Yeah, like there's different bosses that you fight throughout and the map changes every single time. And then like because it's all procedurally generated, the level designs are not the same from time to time that you play through.
Right.
So, you know, like there's certain enemies that will show up on certain types of levels, like there's ice levels and there's fire levels and things like that. But like they're not in a specific order, like you can't predict what's going to be there. The only thing that is consistent is when you get to the bosses, they have the same, you know, obviously the same move sets and things. And then when you get to the warlock, that is the same. But that's yeah. about it. Everything else is up for grabs. Yeah. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's that. Also, Fire Emblem Awakening. Guys, I finished it.
Oh, yeah.
Finished it. Yes. I'm so happy.
Are you going to go through again so you can get all the classes?
Fuck no. Okay, so, guys, I was playing through and There was a point where I was talking, my main character was talking to one of the other characters who's a Wyvern rider, and she was talking about matchmaking services for Wyverns. They don't just have shipping for the characters. They have shipping for the characters' mounts. What is this? Why? So that was just jacked up. I was just, I couldn't even, I just totally facepalmed. I didn't know. All right. So anyway, also another thing about the shipping, weirdly, there's this romance option for Lucina and Owain. And the thing about Lucina and Owain, they are the children of, you know, some of the characters from, you know, the initial set. However, they are always cousins. The way that it works out, they are always cousins because most of the kids are determined by who their mother is, but Lucina is always the daughter of a particular male character. And oh, no. So, you know, the way that that works out, they're always going to be cousins. I took them all the way to S rank because for some reason they have like the marriage rank available. And just to see what happened, I wanted to know. And it gets all double entendre where he's giving her a sheath for her blade as his proxy to protect her if he's not there. And like their relationship status when they reach S rank is basically taken, like they can't go marry anybody. But instead of husband and wife, it says companion.
Uh-oh.
It's real. Yeah, it's real weird. And I'm like, oh, okay. So anyway, that was a thing that I discovered when I was playing this.
That has to be a thing. I know nothing about the taboo of dating or marrying a cousin in Japan, but that seems like a dissonance that would have arisen from some kind of localization.
Well, I mean, like, you know, to be fair, I believe it was Alex who was like, but that never stopped actual noblemen. You know,
right,
they
right.
always, you know, because they're both nobles. And, you know, that, okay, yeah, yep. But this is still a game made in 2008 or whatever.
Right, right.
So anyway, so, yeah, moving on from the shipping. So the story stuff ends up being really predictable. So it's basically the middle part, weirdly, that I seem to enjoy, the part where, like, you're starting to get all the kids and you see all the story and it gets, like, kind of heart-wrenching and then it kind of loops back around to power of friendship type crap. And I'm like, all right.
That's enough of that.
So. I mean, but it's not bad. Like it's not excruciating to go through, but it's just kind of like, all right, been there, done that. This is well trodden, you know, path that I'm walking right now. But dude, right at the end of the game, they open up like 7 more paralogues, which were apparently free DLC released one each month after the game's original release. And a paralogue is basically a side story. And, you know, like it's a whole different map with, you know, like a battle that you can fight and then a little bit more story bit beats. And basically, I was told that more or less you get another playable character that you don't need and that the story beats that you learn there are basically a disservice to the game overall is what I was told. So I didn't play them, even though the nodes were orange, which is my favorite color. I didn't go there.
Oh.
So, I didn't because at this point nothing was a challenge and they never gave me anything really tactical to play with. Everybody was just OP, so there wasn't really any strategy to the strategy RPG, even though the mechanics worked fine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't feel I needed to spend the time doing it because it wasn't getting me anything. Like, I didn't feel challenged. I didn't feel excited.
If you're so strong that you're not actually making choices anymore like that.
Yeah.
That's the death for that kind of strategy RPG.
And so it wasn't like I hated it. I just was like done with it. You
right,
know,
yeah.
I was done. So basically another comment, though, is that all the older characters basically became useless once you got the kids, with a few exceptions. Like most of the older characters I just stopped using after a while. And in that, it's unlike Shining Force, at least to me anyway, where you can use your original folks the whole time. And while you do get some that are more powerful later in the game, fewer of your older crew become obsolete, at least I don't, the way that I feel about the original Shining Force games.
Yeah.
So I was kind of sad about that basically they just render those characters useless because all the kids are naturally always better, which I'm sorry, that's not always the case.
No, sometimes you just get a shit kid.
times you have a crappy kid and they're just useless. So anyway, so that was a thing. Do you have any questions about that before I move on to the last one?
No, I'm happy that it's off your plate so you can play something that you're going to get more joy out of.
Take a break from the RPGs for a little bit, because I did do, three of them back to back?
Yeah, you were on kind of a tear.
Yeah, well, I usually do. Remember, uh-huh. I was in a visual novel pick, and then I got into adventure games for a little while, and then I went over to RPGs, and long before that, I was in shooters. I don't know what happened. So, I don't know. I just kind of bounce around. Well, I looped back around. I decided that I was going to pull open my Vita and play some of the stuff that I have outstanding on my backlog to finish up series. That is to say, I also have started playing Corpse Party Blood Drive.
Yeah.
So... guys, this game is Corpse Party set in the Miiverse.
So it's 3D. They made the bump up to that, but they keep kind of the chibi aesthetic. So, but even with that chibi 3D aesthetic, even with everything being Miis, you mentioned that two of the characters that you've seen, two or three, are already booby ladies.
Oh, I will show you the booby lady. I will talk about that. I will talk about the booby ladies.
Chibi 3D booby.
Okay, so here's the thing. There was a particular here. Let me find. Okay, here. Look at this booby. That is what that is what Phil called it. A B-O-O-B-I-I. Booby. Like a booby me.
Yeah, that outfit, like, that seems like a gag outfit from a Zero Escape game.
And that's just what she waltzes around in. But look at the me that's on the screen.
Yeah, no,
you know?
I'm looking at both.
Like, no. Just, no.
That's,
no.
That's incorrect.
Yeah, so anyway, Phil called it a booby, and I thought that was the funniest thing I had heard in a while. And so I, like, totally tore up laughing about that.
Yeah.
But. So anyway, I'll talk more about how that disservices it, but let me just start from the top. So this game continues, the story continues where Book of Shadows left off, and unfortunately it continues like after some time has passed after Book of Shadows had left off with this really dramatic ending, and it just like most of the emotional stuff of that really dramatic ending is just kind of like glossed over, and then like just the precursor to what starts happening in Blood Drive. So, I mean, like, they built up all of this emotion and then just kind of skipped over it when they started this game, because they have all of these new characters that they throw out there, including lots of booby ladies. So there's lots of boobies everywhere. But don't worry, guys. The most important thing, that bathroom situation, the bathroom horror situation, that's still the thing. That's still a thing, guys.
Wait a minute. I need to navigate to this.
Yes.
Oh, don't okay. Yeah. So it's still a major plot point that a character needs to use the restroom. Is this
what?
Is this still set? It's not Hope Speak Academy. Is it set in the school from the first game?
Part of it. Okay. I just got to where they are back in Heavenly Host. They are back there. In that particular part, she was not in Heavenly Host yet. However, the moment that you get into Heavenly Host with the new character, somebody has to go to the bathroom.
Oh, fun. So,
it's still a thing. Bathrooms are such a big deal. But anyway, all right. Moving on, the voice actors in this game, they remain the same for all the characters that are continuing from the prior games. That's good.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, a lot of the really great tells have been replaced with Miiverse shows. So those textual descriptions of all the ghastly deaths are now vaguely shown by, like, a ghost Mii, for example, running at Ayumi. And the sprite wiggles on top of her while you hear cutting sounds, and then the screen goes black.
Oh,
instead
geez.
Of
no.
Yeah, instead of all the stuff that used to be a thing.
That's like the cool thing. Like that's the thing about Corpse Party.
The writing is so good, right? And so this is not scary, okay? This is not scary. The showing with this me, I just an image of one of the ghosts that Ayumi comes across. and her face is eaten off, but it's a Mii with like
right, a with vacant, just a red, like a red swirl texture.
It looks like Cole after his ER face surgery.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, like, somebody in the level chat, I want to say, had said that it looks like somebody had a blueberry pie eating contest.
Oh, it's definitely like after that scene from Stand By Me.
Yeah, and so, I mean, like, it's just seeing on a little chibi me versus having the description and a black screen, just like there isn't even a comparison. Yeah. It's just not exciting.
I was going to play like devil's advocate and say like some of what makes the first Corpse Party really effective is that dissonance between the 16-bit chibi art, right, and the fucked up stuff that happens in the text, right? You could say like, oh, like you might imagine that this would undercut the horror, but like that actually weirdly, strangely works. But like if they are offloading even the spooky stuff onto the super deformed art, like that just seems yeah, misguided.
I mean, like they have shifted it a little bit to where the narrative focus is more on the characters' internal dialogue. So like you actually get to see inside of the heads of different characters more than you did in the prior games, like
literally with the person with no face.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, like, you know, when Yoshiki is one of the characters there, you know, his thoughts and thought processes and everything come into play in a way that you haven't seen before.
Right.
And, you know, like it'll switch, like Ayumi will have her thought processes and then it'll switch over to Yoshiki and you can see what he's thinking a little bit before it moves on. So, I mean, there is a little bit more of the writing that way, and the quality of the writing that is there is still consistent. Mm-hmm. But like so far I've had one wrong end and I haven't been excited by that.
Yeah.
I've only finished a couple of the chapters and I'm like halfway through the next chapter after that. So yeah, basically, you know, it's consistent. It plays consistent with a lot of the elements from prior games. You know, the writing is still the same quality, but it's unfortunately, you know, the new style, I just am not digging. At the same time, I'll tell you that this has a lot more mechanics to it than prior games, because the first Corpse Party game is basically an RPG Maker adventure game. You have an inventory, but you don't have to use like any items, or you don't have battles or any of that stuff.
It's like there's a health system in the menu, but that's mostly because it's an RPG Maker game.
Yeah, yeah. And then the second game is a visual novel game with some point-and-click adventure elements to it. And then this game, there's a new hiding mechanic. You can hide from different ghosts that pop up, and it's not just key ghosts that you come across. There are also other malevolent spirits that are wandering that you have to hide from. You have a flashlight that you can turn off and on, and you have to manage the batteries for it. There is a hit point, you know, a health bar, and stuff can kill you. And also, ambient things in the scenery, like you can fall into a hole or step on something sharp and mm-hmm. it will hurt you. So you have to watch the scenery and navigate around more things than you used to. Whoever's in front, because like if you have multiple people in your party, whoever the main character is in front takes more damage. You have healing items to try to get your health back up.
Right.
I was just introduced to the use of ofuda, or spirit talismans, basically to banish ghosts. And there's also the darkening mechanic.
The sheets of paper, right?
Yes. It's the sheets of paper that you place on the forehead of a ghost to make them disappear. And then the darkening mechanic from prior games comes back. So it's trying to be more of a survival horror game, mm-hmm. but it's in the Miiverse. That's the only problem.
That's
a
bummer.
Miiverse, guys. And so I haven't been on board with that. Now, like the story stuff they're working on, it's been pretty complex. Like they've got a lot of stuff going on. There's all these cultists that are popping up that want to get a hold of the Book of Shadows and want to get into Heavenly Host, mm-hmm. interestingly enough. And so like there are a lot of people crossing and double crossing each other and, you know, trying to do all different kinds of stuff. And there's like a new way to get into the school and out of the school. Anyway, like all of that stuff kind of is in the beginning of this game, so you can play it for more details on that. But yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. I'm interested to see what they do with the story because, again, even though the death scenes are now cut out and they're not writing those as detailed as they were before, there are elements of this game still that are interesting. And I also want to see just how effective those survival horror elements that they're trying to put in there, just how well those were utilized. Are they going to be token or are they going to be like legit, you know, things that you have to manage and be careful about? It's still got the same setup where you access chapters from the start screen, though. So it's, you know, each individual chapter is a bite-sized experience that you're meant to go through different times in order to see what happens when this or that, you know, is done instead.
That's good.
So, yeah, branching paths and all that. But we'll see. I just started it. I have some experience with it. Some things, some initial impressions.
Just turned German. I have some experience with it.
I generally have some kind of accent issue.
Sorry. Yeah. No, but
I am part German. I could have just slipped into an accent. So. But
No. Well, that's a bummer that they changed the style in a way that's kind of deleterious to it. I was hoping. Like I initially wasn't worried that they moved it to 3D because whatever, as long as the writing is still there and as long as they know how to effectively portray what's good, you'll have to let me know if it picks up and if they find their legs with it.
Yeah. I mean, like the hiding mechanic is kind of cool because when you hide in a closet, at least the only thing I've had to hide in so far has been like a big closet. Basically, if the ghost sees that you go in there, they can find you. And when they do, like their bloodshot eyeball pops up out of nowhere in front of you. And like, you know, you've got like a big heart beating over to the side, which is like, you know, your heartbeat. And, you know, there's you can hear them moving around outside, but then also there's like a visual indicator, a red circle that'll pop up every time that their foot taps if they're right in front of you, and then it'll turn yellow and then green and then finally vanish, that kind of a thing. But you have to time like when you get out of the cabinet and everything just right, so that way, like, you know, on their walk cycle or whatever, they don't happen to catch you. So so it might be really, really good. It might end up being, you know, like a different form of horror than it has been. I'm not sure.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt, but at the same time, I'm also really apprehensive because it looks like it's in the Miiverse. But
yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
We'll see. I will report in when I continue.
Yeah. Anything else?
That is it.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I don't have much this week. So over the weekend, I did a lot of like non-video game. I did like board gaming type stuff. So there's a new Magic set that got released this last week. So I played that on Friday night with some friends. And then I also played a game of Twilight Imperium, which was the like third kind of monthly game that I've played of that. And so we did that all day yesterday and it was a lot of fun. In terms of video games, mostly all that I have right now is I've been replaying Subnautica, so I continue doing that. And two of my friends are playing it right now, so I've been watching them play it as well.
How fun. Are they streaming it, or are you just kind of hanging out with them?
I'm watching it through Steam's like video game watcher, which... every time I've tried to watch somebody play it on Twitch, and with Dennis's included, like, it's always been really choppy for some reason.
Oh, weird.
But for some reason, you don't get the same choppiness if you just watch it on Steam. So I don't know what that's about. I don't know. And I didn't even notice the difference in the quality, because I tried streaming it before and after I changed my internet, but it still is the same way both times. So
yeah, it must be like a weird like encode thing.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have a lot to talk about this week. However, I did, just before recording the podcast, pick up God of War finally. And so that is installing right now. And so I'm going to start playing that after we record this episode.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear how you like that. Mm-hmm. So preview of things to come.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw, so David's probably not going to be on this episode because he got back, but we're so close to the end. I saw he's playing it as well. Are you watching him play it, or?
I have not seen him play it yet. No.
Yeah. So it's a bug. It's going around.
It's the first time I've used my PS4 in a while. So.
Oh no, not God of War, Subnautica. I'm sorry. I didn't mean.
Gotcha. No, Subnautica. I mean, it's, I think it's probably one of the better games I've played so far this year. So
yeah.
I, Yeah, it deserves the popularity it's getting, I think.
It's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good one. Yeah. Well, I don't have a whole terrible amount to talk about. Been continuing to fiddle around with the Nintendo Labo.
Have you built things successfully?
Yes. it's fun. It's a lot of fun. It has all of the excitement that you would expect out of following directions, which for me is a lot.
All right.
That sounds like a dig. That's more of a dig at myself than at Labo. But no, it's a good amount of fun. So in the time since we recorded last, I made the fishing rod, the house, and I got real impatient, so I didn't make the motorcycle, but I made the piano.
Ooh, how was the piano?
So the piano wasn't as much trouble to build as everybody says. It's a lot of parts, but a lot of the parts are very similar to each other.
Like the keys.
Yeah. Just, you know, like it's not as mechanically intricate. I thought there would be more stuff with the rubber bands and things, but that's just really not the case. I really haven't even like scratched the surface of what you can do with the piano, because there's just the toy piano part, where, you know, you're playing with the octave or however many keys. I guess it'd be an octave. It's eight white keys, five black. And you can shift the octaves. And what's funny is they have like these little dials that you drop in to a hole on the top, and it'll change. It changes a bunch of different stuff, but like in the toy version, it'll change the voice. So like you drop in one of them, and then boom, instead of being a piano, all the little ghost things turn into cats.
So cats meowing in pitch.
Yeah. and then you can rotate the dial, which is just more cardboard with a reflective tape on it. It senses you're rotating it, and it'll like make it sound ghostly or make them reverb to one direction or the other. So it's real neat. The more detailed version of it though is like a studio version where you're actually like laying down tracks and stuff. And like the different knobs, like you drop in one and it'll change it so it's kind of like a bass almost, where the Joy-Con in the back will vibrate at the frequency that'll make the note. And then you just hit record and you play your stuff. And then you can play it back and save that track. And there's even more that you can do with different voices. Like they have cards that you can drop in that'll almost be like a sequencer for percussion. And they also have cards that change the shape of the sound wave as well, so you can do all that. So like you're messing with this thing and you're shifting, like you're with your right hand you're plunking out the notes, and with your left hand you're just kind of like messing around with stuff and like modifying the pitch to the point where like you can do vibrato on a sustained note or a sustained chord by grabbing onto the cardboard and like shaking it or warping it, because it senses, like it does everything by sensing IR on the back of it. And you know, by pushing stuff out of whack, it says like, okay, well we're gonna bend the pitch this way or that way.
Okay, so I this is kind of a different one, but I saw with the race car one they have like an IR feed of that, so that
yes,
and it'll show it to you. Mm-hmm. So you can see what you look like in IR, but then it also has like functions where it can follow you around or whatever from that.
Yep. You can have it follow like a little beacon, so you can either have it follow like reflective tape, so you can put it on the end of something and it'll go toward that, or you can use reflective tape to put down a track for it to follow.
Okay. It seems like the IR is the secret sauce in like a lot of the applications.
Yeah, and there's a whole other side to this that I haven't messed around with, which is like a node-based programming, not like Node.js, like Microsoft database programming or whatever. But like, you know, you're dragging around little nodes to program stuff. Like you can actually build your own Labo stuff and just program the logic into it yourself based on reflective tape.
Is it like Scratch or whatever, that one like MIT language or whatever they made for kids, where it's like you can move the pieces around of the logic?
Yeah, like any number of those things where it's, you know, just you're connecting wires between stuff. But it's real, real cool. I'm weirdly impressed by the fishing pole, A, because I kind of think fishing games are pretty fun. Fight me. but B, like... It is very strange because you have you have the tackle, you know, you've got the reel and everything, and that is just a holder for the two Joy-Cons that sends you pulling it senses the tilt of the rod itself, and also senses you spinning the reel. It doesn't actually do anything with the line that hangs out from it, but the inside of the housing, using the cardboard, they actually built in like a sound effect, like a ratchet. So when you're spinning the reel, it'll make a ticka 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 ticka, like it'll make the clicking of the reel, which is
super charming. But it's like a physical sound.
Yeah. Nice. And it gives a little bit of resistance. So the reel itself is connected to a base that you set on the floor, and that's what you put the switch itself in, and it displays, you know, it displays your lore and shows you the fish and everything. But the line goes from the reel down into that, into kind of this spinning kind of almost spool that is like rigged up with a rubber band for tension. So like if you let it go, you know, it'll just pull the reel toward you, and it provides resistance as you're doing, you know, as you're pulling it back. So when you get a nibble, you'll feel you'll see it, but you also feel the reel like vibrate a little bit. Then you have to yank it back in order to set the hook, and then like follow the fish left and right, and manage your reeling in speed in order to not have the line break or have it get away. It's super fun. I know, again, fight me. I know it might not sound that fun. It's really fun.
No one in Japan is going to fight you. That a fishing game is fun.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the big question. Are you going to stream playing the Labo?
You can't. Is the thing. Well, so the Labo has to, like, you know, it kind of needs to be in the housing of the thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's not in... If you can't put it in the dock, you can't output it to HDMI.
Well, you could just do a webcam of you playing the Labo.
Oh, true. Yeah, I don't want to do that.
All right, fair.
But yeah, I'm messing around with that. Like the motorcycle, which I haven't built yet, I need to, you know, I don't need to do that. I would like to do that pretty soon so I can get all the cardboard, like the extra scraps and stuff out of my house. That seems like the most gamey, like, you know, like it's a racing game. But yeah, I haven't messed around with any of the like DIY stuff, and who knows if I will. But like, it's just a super neat toy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine it being fun to build with your kids, et cetera, et cetera. Look at any other think piece that has been written about the Labo by people who have kids. so any more questions about that?
It sounds really charming. When are you going to get the robot one?
I'm not done.
What? Why?
I don't know. It probably wouldn't fit me. A and B. I don't like the idea of stomping around the house dressed as a robot.
Coalbot.
Yeah. Hello, I am Coalbot. Like there would literally be no difference. Oh, jeez. The other thing that I have been playing is an iOS game called Deep Town.
Deep Town.
Interesting title.
Deep Town. So when I went to Milwaukee, I got into my head that, like, oh, I want to play some mobile stuff. I've got freeways. That's not going to last forever. And it had been a while since I played any kind of, like, idle game or, like, a clicker, almost. So, like, I fired up Tiny Tower, but it's like, yeah, I play this forever ago, but it's not really that great. It's really passive. I fired up Adventure Capitalist when it was like, oh, no, this is no good. Like, it is literally just numbers get bigger. Settled on Deep Town because I heard about it from the besties. It was just mentioned offhandedly by Justin McElroy as kind of this stylish idle game that was mostly focused on like resource management and crafting. So the idea is you're playing as these robots who were sent to a faraway planet. It's Earth. And you are digging a mine, downward, but also building kind of a tower upward where each floor kind of has a different purpose. So you have like a smelter, you've got like a crafting room, you could eventually get like chemical engineering to do, you make like sulfuric acid or make rubber or stuff, greenhouses, etc. Yeah. Sulfuric acid, you know, just general purpose acid to have around.
It's good to have, you know,
just in case you need it. But and then as you dig down, like, you have almost like MMO style cooldown attacks, where you're summoning little robots, but also shooting lasers and like freezing or heating stuff up in order to do damage. The thing that makes this interesting is, you know, A, you get all these quests that you're setting up to, like, hey, craft X number of like circuits so you can build this computer that'll advance a story thing forward. As you go deeper, you find like these corrupted blocks that they don't fight back, but they have regeneration. And like each strata of the earth has like a different resource. So, like, this is one that it's a corrupted block of coal that has, you know, arms that reach up and wiggle around, and it has a certain regen, and it's like a treadmill almost. Like, they get stronger, more HP, more regen, and you're trying to figure out how to use your skills and resources to, you know, kill them before they rise back, until you get to the boss battles. And then every time you clear a boss, which is one of these like elders, you know, like an amber elder or a copper elder or something, you, like, every time you clear one of those, it opens up like a new set of buildings or a new mechanic to kind of work with. It's pretty neat. I'm engaging with it almost on the level of like Fallout Shelter, Ben. Where, yeah, it's not so much like a game that you sit down to play for a long period of time, but like you go into it, like, you get enough stuff to level up, you fight a couple, you know, you mine until you find a corrupted block. Oh, I can't do anything because I don't have the resources to level up and take this thing down. So you go up and figure out what you need to craft, like set up your, basically your throughput, like, okay, I can smelt this much copper in this amount of time, which will let me craft this many circuits in this amount of time, which will feed into so-and-so in this amount of time, and then setting up and going back and checking on it, or like reallocating your drones to automate stuff for you as you go back to it. So checking in a couple of times a day. So it has free to play stuff built into it. I've put like $20 into it, just because I like the game, and hey, the developer deserves money. But it's, you know, it's not strictly necessary. It's mostly all of the paid currency either gets you like different item chests, you know, like loot crate kind of things, or lets you like speed up operations. But if you're patient to let stuff run, then it just becomes, you know, I'll eventually get everything I want. I just have to wait for it.
It looks like a friendlier or happier aesthetic of Machinarium.
Yeah, it's a little bit Machinarium. They're kind of cribbing from Steamworld Dig a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So Deep Town. Deep Town. I think it might have came out this year. I literally just heard about it on that podcast, and I'm like, yeah, it sounds about my speed. Something I can...
Deep Town sounds like the home of Sugarbone.
No, Sugarbone can't go back to Deep Town. The sheriff gave him like one last chance, but he cannot. Who he better not tempt it. So yeah, that's everything. Otherwise, I have been completely swamped with doing stuff for WoW.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay! Swamped!
Yay! Swamped! Been playing games.
Feeling.
Playing games for a different show.
Yeah. Well, I was cheering because WoW is cool.
Yeah.
Also,
got
in
good
addition.
Stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Bayonetta's
support
fun.
The network.
Thank
watch,
you.
Watch, play, WoW, whatever.
All the stuff. Thank you.
And things.
Yeah.
Hex crank.
Weekends, weekend evenings.
Yeah, and things.
And things. So, that's...
That petering out means that the show's about to be over.
I think so. I'm very totally. Tired, but I also have a lot more to do tonight, so I'm kind of like... I don't know where I'm going to get my second wind.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Down.
If
you'll get third and fourth win as well.
Yeah, yeah, and then tomorrow is lost. Tuesday never happens. Oh, cool. Well, are we ready to button it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. Jala already did the plug section. Support the network. Listen to the other shows. Engage with us on social media. Tell your friends. I see no reason to prolong this outro section. We really appreciate you listening. If you can come back next week, we'd appreciate that too. Ben, are you going to be here next week?
I get back Monday, so
you're probably going to want to recover, maybe.
Yeah, I'll double check what time I get back in exactly. I might be able to do it, but we'll see.
Okay. We probably could work that out off the air, but
okay.
But I decided to do it on the air. Well, thank you, everybody. Facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast, iTunes ratings and reviews. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Jalachan in all the places, all of them. You can find me there.
And I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
Yeah, and stick around for some titles. I think if I drink it, okay, so this is the gamble that I need to take. I'm not going to drink coffee. If I drink a beer, like that usually
the first one perks you up.
Yeah, the first one will perk you up because of the sugar
for like an hour.
For like an hour,
you get sleepy.
I just have to hope that that extra perk will get me through. Will help me find a point where I have momentum.
I think you should drink decaf coffee, and your body might be tricked into thinking it's actual coffee.
Drink decaf beer.
You could do that too.
Why don't you get like a B12 water or something? Come on. Seriously.
Yeah.
These are not healthy options for you, dude.
I know. I'm probably just going to drink ice water. That usually perks me up. It was just a funny thing to say. Yeah. So who has titles?
I only have one.
Okay.
Colbot.
I like Colbot.
Ben?
I also only have one. I have the Laszlos.
It's all up to you, Cole. Come on.
I have...
What do you got?
I have Chibi 3D Booby.
That's pretty
good. But Booby is... It's spelled B-O-O-B-I-B-E. Or B-I-E. Yeah?
I like it.
Cool.
Sure.
It is so moved.
The way that it should be spelled is with two I's.
Okay.
That is how it should be spelled because that is the way that it is by the Miiverse standards and by Phil's joke,
GB3D,
which made me
booby.
Laugh.
Yeah.
Booby.
Yeah. Okay, yes. Cool. It is so moved.
Yay.
All right. Well, I'm going
to
go.
Let us continue to move before we stop moving.
What's that?
Let us continue to move before we stop moving.
Yeah, I'm going to go get some ice water and also splash my face with water. Usually washing my face wakes me up, so I'm good.
Rock'em, sock'em, Colbot.
Yeah. All right. Take care, you guys. Thank you.
Have a good week.
Yep. Safe travels, Ben.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Not safe travels to me, though.
Oh, bye. Safe travels to you, to Austin. Yes. Both of you. Everybody be safe, please. All right. Bye.
All right. See you guys.